Chapter 16. Hide and Seek. He was about yay high. A soft and fluff-faced tavern keeper held a stubby-fingered hand at chest height. Hair a bit darker than hay, mayhaps. Built like a stick. But then so many boys are at that age, eh?
The man tried a bit of humor, but it fell short in the face of the three very serious men to whom he was speaking.
What did he carry with him? What was he wearing?
Jinzan Fair asked in a low voice. He was dressed in the garb of the night guards to attract less attention as he made his way about the city. Black lacquered mail and doublet, dark gray hood and trousers. The truncheon and short sword at his belt were as useful as horseshoes on a monohorn, but he carried them to complete the disguise. He made no secret of his identity to those he encountered, but, as one of the liberators, he drew greetings and well wishes as he walked down any street. For his purposes, that would have been counterproductive.
Little lad was all in his feast day best, except in, of course, he probably dresses like that most days, being yours and all. He was scuffed and dirty like he'd been out playing in the streets, had himself a walking stick, fancy as be all. Carried it round like a parade banner, though he did, using both hands and keeping it away from his body, like so,
the keeper replied, mimicking the manner he described.
Did you speak to him, or try to apprehend him?
Jinzan persisted. He was not angry with the tavern keeper, but a hint of desperation in his voice might have led one to think that he was.
No, I, counselor. I heard the rumors of folk turning up dead, and kept my mouth shut. Made like I didn't see him at all. He looked right at me, but not in the eye, and just kept on about whatever business he had. Never said a word or nothing.
The nervous keeper pulled a bar rag from his pocket and wiped at his brow.
Where did he go from here? Jinzan asked, staring intently at the keeper across his own bar.
It was the first fresh sighting they had found in days, and he could ill afford to squander it. The animate dead had been finding in Anzik's wake were less than helpful when it came to answering questions.
He rummaged a bit in the kitchen and left out that way. I went straight to find a guardsman after that,
the man half pleaded. Jinzan did not wait to make an apology for scaring the man, who had done no wrong. He strode to the door and stormed through into the kitchen.
For your help, one of Jinzan's similarly garbed companions said, leaving a weighty purse of gold on the bar.
They were there to aid High Counselor Fair in whatever way he required, including smoothing over the feelings of distraught informants. The kitchens were dark, save for the starlight that came through the open window. Jinzan lit the room like daylight with a quick gesture. A stack of bowls had been upset, and there was a puddle of thick brown broth on the floor near the stew pot. Jinzan looked into the pot and saw that the ladle had been left in carelessly, covering it with cold stew, handle and all.
At least he's remembering to eat, even if he is acting a pig about it.
Jinzan walked out the back door and into the narrow alley behind the tavern. There was no sign of any boy. It was late night, even by Zoran's cosmopolitan standards, with even the drunkards and whores abed. The only sounds were the far-off rush of the Santar River and the caterwauling of a cat in heat. When his two companions emerged from the tavern to join him, Jinzan picked a direction and took off, trusting to luck in the absence of a solid lead to follow. They had come so close. Shadow to shadow, Todd made his way over to where Jodul had hidden himself.
What sort of cat was that supposed to be? You thinking that's what a dead one would sound like?
Todd whispered sarcastically. The two were dressed plainly in dark grays and browns. Both were from a school of skulking that liked having answers to angry questions about why one might be nosing about in the dark. None of the answers to those questions bore as much credibility when the answerer was dressed in nothing but black. It was a suspicious color, and not a lot better for hiding than the dark drabs they had chosen instead.
Worked, didn't it? Jodul snapped quietly. They just went off that way, but I think they were guessing. They seemed all hot and eager heading in, like they was owed money from some fella in there. They came out slow, looked round a bit, wander off. I think the kid bobbed them again.
Well, we can sneak after them west of the night and hope that sorcerer don't get wind of us up his breeches, hoping he gets lucky. Or we can head back and tell Faolin and see if he's got a better idea, Todd suggested,
clearly favoring the latter option. Neither of them relished the thought of tailing a sorcerer of the renown of Jinzan Fair. They had never heard of him back home, but everyone in Magrin knew his name. The trouble with sorcerers was that they could see out the back of their heads, and even through walls with their magic vision. One could never be certain when they would try looking.
Yeah, let Faolin run round chasing famous sorcerers if he likes. I'll run the docks and cardholes all night, if any wants me to, but I'm not for sticking my neck under an axe on the chance we get lucky the night they stumble on a kid, Jodul said.
The two kept to the alleyways and back streets of Zorin as they departed, safe from death at the hands of the Magrin magic for one more night.
Yeah, looks like they lost the scent of him, Jodul explained. Kid must have gone through, though, because they had a sure hurry heading in there in the first place. If and they'd have gotten nothing, they'd have come back out the way they gone in.
Faolin looked down at the huge table around which the four of them gathered. Upon its surface was Zorin, rendered in miniature by Faolin's magic. It had started days ago as a crude copy, based on a paper map they had brought with them from Cadran. But as they learned more of the city, it grew more detailed and more accurate. Many of the houses were still just little boxes with roofs. But the buildings they had studied bore more detail, especially the ones that Faolin had seen personally. The ships in the harbor bore tiny names scrawled upon their sides, keeping track of the comings and goings of Magrin's merchant and naval fleets. The beautiful granite structures near the center of the city were the headquarters of the Magrin High Council, the Royal Palace, the tournament grounds, and the Hall of Emissaries, where foreign lands housed their diplomats on a semi-permanent basis within Magrin. Also rendered in greater detail were a number of seemingly random lesser buildings, whose roofs Faolin had turned red, breaking with the otherwise faithful, if incomplete, rendition of the city. High Councillor Fair would not have stopped there in such haste had a sighting not been reported. I will mark it anyway, just to be safe. Faolin waved a hand over that portion of the city, and the roof of the Pickled Swine Tavern changed, along with a few details as Todd and Jodul had described the building to Faolin earlier. There were two glassed and shuttered windows flanking the door, a back entrance to the alley, and a fanciful sign depicting a pig poking its head up out of a barrel. Aelon shrugged. If there's any melody to this song, I can't hear it. Lad seems to be running around the city on a lark. Could it be these Magrin are having it on with us? No. If they knew of us, I suspect they would have just killed us and been done with it. Chained in the dungeon, at the very least. They have nothing to gain from leading us on a merry in their capital, with one of their high counselors keeping out of the war atop it, Faolin reasoned. Well, figure it like this, Jodul began, trying to make himself sound erudite. The little fella starts at home, see? Jodul pointed to the Fair estate in the northwest of the city, on a hillside with expansive gardens and a view of the Aliani Sea. Then they find dead horses and a stable boy, here, he pointed again. A dock worker here, he pointed to a warehouse near the harbor. A butcher and his apprentice, a librarian and some old scholar, a fisherman and half his crew, a greengrocer but not his wife or daughter, a pair of city watchmen, a Safshan caravan master and eight of his guards, Jodul summarized, giving everyone a knowing look to add to the suspense. The lad's looking for food in places too wide. Think about it. Warehouse, stables, library, caravan. All great hiding spots. The rest he got something to eat. Aelon looked to Faolin and rolled his eyes, keeping Jodul at his back. I must get up front, Aelon said. It's dawn, and who knows, we might see a customer today. They had rented a storefront to work from, and ostensibly to sell the wares they had brought with them from Cadran. While names like The Mysterious Shop of Wonders, Things from Cadran, and Exotic Goods seemed like fine names for attracting business, Phelan had overruled them all. They called their shop Merod's Goods, at Phelan's insistence, as he deemed it about the least likely name he could think of to attract neither unwanted business nor suspicious attention from authorities. They had a crude sign painted up on the short coin, just black paint on a plain wooden plank. The humble and boring facade kept away most. It was Alon's job, in the role of the eponymous Merod, to dissuade any stalwart shoppers who made it past those safeguards. Alon spoke Pigeon McGrin, drove hard bargains, and made no attempt to win over any would-be customers. Todd and Joe Duell lingered as Phelan stared dreamily at the city model. They had no real business to attend to and no good excuse save fatigue for wanting to take their leave. It was not technically a military hierarchy, but since leaving Cadrus, Phelan had been very clear about who was in charge. Phelan had not given them any further orders, nor permission to leave. "Hungry, yes," Phelan said, half to himself. After a long pause, he continued, "But not hiding. At least that is not his first thought. Stables, docks, caravans. He wants to escape the city, but has failed each time. And he cannot be hiding in these places for long, since the bodies have been discovered quickly enough. He must have some other place he is taking refuge."
"Like where?" Todd asked. "Sounds like he got chased out of some good spots already."
"Has anyone considered the sewers?" Phelan asked, cocking his head curiously.
"Yeah, a bit," Joe Duell replied. "It'd be the kind of place I'd have hidden if I was 10 summers and running. But nobody said anything about seeing dead folks standing round down there."
"Only 3 sorts of folk make a habit of walking the sewers," Phelan observed. "Crews who keep them in working order, thieves, and guards who go down to protect work crews from thieves. I shall need you two to..."
"No problem. Already ahead of you. Me and Todd ain't making enough coin at the export racket. We want some easy gold. I'll ask around and see what turns up, if any of them are talking about dead thieves in the sewers."
"Very well. I will make my rounds of the brothels," Phelan replied, straight-faced and all business.
"Hey now, that don't seem fair," Todd replied.
Joe Duell noted that the boy left the grocer's wife and daughter alive. So far he has only killed men and boys. Brothels are also places known for harboring the sort of women whose maternal instincts may not be entirely fulfilled. They might take pity on a runaway. "He might not take it into his head to kill them," Phelan said with a shrug. Joe Duell gave Phelan a hard, suspicious look, but said nothing.
"Got them sorcerers. Can't win, fighting them with words."
Anzik blew a frustrated sigh that flipped a lock of his filthy hair out of his eyes.
"Why does everyone try to grab me? Podley seemed so nice that time Mother brought us to see Delamis."
The footman stood smartly aside the door of the Delamy family carriage, just the way Anzik had remembered him. He seemed to belong that way, dead or not, so Anzik had put him there after reanimating him.
"Maybe they will not notice, for a while."
The carriage house had seemed large enough, and cluttered enough, that he might have hidden there a night or two. If the carriage had been ready to leave, he might have tried sneaking aboard to see where it got him. Alas, it appeared the carriage would be going nowhere. The one who put people in it was dead, and Anzik did not intend to stay around to make him carry out his job. The back of the carriage house opened onto a narrow road. Anzik poked his head out to make sure no one was around, even though he could see in the ether that there was not. It seemed like the thing heroes in the fairy stories did when hiding, so he thought he ought to as well. He darted across the narrow road to an even smaller one, more a man-width gap than a proper street. It was well that no one watched him go, as the sight of an awkward, scrawny boy trying to dart while carrying a staff half again his height might have given cause to laugh. Anzac hated being laughed at. With barely a thought, a wrought iron grating in the ground rose up, revealing an iron-runged ladder. Tucking the staff of Galen under one arm, Anzac climbed down into the sewers. The grate settled itself back down with a faint grating of metal on stone. Jinzan sat in the foyer of his home, slouched across the arms of a velvet-upholstered chair. He looked haggard and scruffy. Unshaved stubble threatened to turn into a proper beard if left wild much longer. His eyes were red-rimmed from lack of sleep. A stink of sweat and manure wafted off him from days spent chasing reports of his son in stables, alleys, and warehouses. He had slept little, interrupted by new reports every few hours throughout the day, at his request.
"Why did you have to choose now to show signs of competence?"
Anzac had always been bookish, if he was indeed much of anything. He was often willfully ignorant of his surroundings, but had an enviable amount of focus. He acted however he wished much of the time, not out of unruliness, but rather obliviousness to the requests the world made of him. All about Jinzan were Magrin agents of import, all as haggard as he. They had run themselves to exhaustion chasing the elusive Feyre child. Normally a runaway would be no match for the forces of the High Council could bring to bear, but few young boys possessed such innate gifts with ether as Anzac, nor did they carry a staff meant to swing the pendulum of power between the Magrin Alliance and the Kadrin Empire. The boy was simply proving himself to be too clever to be trapped, and too well-armed to be confronted.
"If I send more men after him, Anzac will be found, but Anzac will kill them. If I wait for him to return, the war will not be so kind as to wait for me. I began it. I must fight it. I also cannot allow the boy free rein to kill at will in the alleys and stables of Zoran while I wage war."
Jinzan closed his eyes and rested his forehead in the palm of his hand.
"I must find a way inside that twisted little mind of Anzac's and find a way to bring him home."
Jinzan was glad to have shielded his eyes with his gesture, as tears began to well in their corners.
"Leave me some respite. I must think,"
he managed to order without his voice breaking. He heard the shuffling of feet and mutters of obeisance as his subordinates left him to his solitude. Silently, he began to weep.
"But I do not know my own son well enough."
Small splashes played around two pairs of boots, echoing in the dim light of the Zoran sewers. The conduit was arched and only man-height at the center, where a channel was cut down the middle to carry a flow of water. Small walkways ran along the sides, but due to the curvature of the masonry, a full-grown man could not walk upright along the sides.
"Cleanest sewer I ever saw," Todd commented. "Ain't even no rat dung or stains." "Folk don't live hereabouts, is why," Jodul replied. "I'm sure, and it's a nice brown mess in the districts. This is all just runoff from the rains and such. Probably be dry in a couple few days, if and there ain't another rain. I'll be hunkering over on the sides if and we get to some such as that." "Oh, you gone soft on me. I mucked Naran Port sewers during a Founding Day festival once. Twice the folk in the city as you see most days. The water was like pudding, and..." Yeah, stuff it. I don't need to hear nothing about what we're lucky we ain't stomping about in," Jodul said.
He held up a hand suddenly and both men stopped. There was banter aplenty during a long, boring assignment, but both had the good sense to go silent when either got the slightest hint of trouble. The light that came down from the occasional grating to the streets above was just enough to see such gestures by.
"I hear someone up ahead," Jodul whispered, leaning close to Todd's ear.
Todd nodded. They heard, faintly but growing steadily louder, a rhythmic clacking. It sounded like wood against stone. No bodies had been found, But Todd and Jodul had found that the sneaks and drifters of Zorin had become wary of the sewers of late. The trail of bodies around the city had spooked them, and more good sense than real information had given them cause to suspect the tunnels below the city. They assumed anyone who had evaded detection for so long must have been making some use of them. The clacking sound was both promising and ominous.
"We should run,"
Todd said softly, taking Jodul by the arm.
"That kid's a killer. Let's get Faolin. Make it his problem."
Todd gave a tug, but Jodul resisted, shrugging free of Todd's half-hearted grasp.
"Nah, kids ain't no killers, even if they kill. This one's a runaway. Ain't you never run away when you was a lad?"
Jodul replied, a plan slowly coming together in his mind.
"Yeah, but I never had me one of them kill staffs neither. Might have settled some scores right quick if and I had." "Runaways need friends," Jodul reasoned,
staring down into the darkness of the passageway where the clacking sound was growing clearer.
"Live friends is good," Todd replied. "You make a friend. I'll be off and get Faolin. Best of luck, Joe."
Todd made a careful motion to extract his feet quietly from the water, then darted softly down the walkway, crouched at the waist. Jodul swore under his breath but held his ground. He was a gambler. He was also a coward. There were times, though, when a pot is so large that even a coward's eyes become clouded.
"If and I get that staff back for Warlock Roshan, I'll be as rich as I want to be. I'll have whatever I ask, I know it."
"Hey, boy,"
Jodul shouted in a whisper when he began to hear soft footsteps of leather shoes mixed in with the tapping of wood against the walls of the sewer.
"You need some help?"
"Who are you?"
The voice was high-pitched, as Jodul would have expected of a lad too young to shave. It was not a fearful voice, but a curious one. It made no pretense of avoiding the notice of those who might have heard through the sewer gratings.
"A friend. My name is Joe,"
Jodul replied, not raising his voice, but ceasing to whisper. As the boy continued to approach, he passed beneath one of the gratings, where Jodul got a good look at him. He was a ragged, dirty thing, dressed in ruined finery. A skinny lad at his best, he looked hungry atop it. He was short enough to walk the sides of the sewers comfortably, but the staff he carried was too tall to hold upright. He had allowed it to bang carelessly against the wall in time with his gait.
"My name is Anzik. You do not work for my father, do you?"
Anzik asked. The question sounded innocent the way he asked it, but Jodul suspected that being a known associate of Jinzan Fair might then be an invitation to a restless death.
"No, I'm not from around here. I ran away too, like you,"
Jodul responded. Todd might have been the better of the two of them at confidence schemes, but Jodul had run away more times than he could count when he was a boy. The boy looked at him strangely, cocking his head to one side. He had stopped approaching.
"You do not want to catch me? Take me back to my father?" he asked.
"Course not. What you need is a place where you—"
Jodul began, but stopped when they suddenly dropped the staff with a clatter and clutched the sides of his head.
"Not now. Stop it. Be quiet,"
Anzik shouted, squeezing his eyes shut and shaking his head. He covered his ears.
"Well, I'm sorry, I didn't—"
Jodul babbled, thinking Anzik's commands were meant for him.
"I don't want a bath. Leave my shirt alone,"
the boy ranted.
"Well, I won't make you take a bath, I swear,"
Jodul promised, his heart racing. He looked to the staff on the ground and wondered if he stood a chance to get to it before the boy could recover his senses and retrieve it.
"Not you, the voices."
Anzik looked up at Jodul from his hands and knees.
"The boy's as mad as monkeys. No wonder no one's caught him yet. Probably been killing voices in his head and catching up real folk instead. Ah, arse me. Todd had the right of it, running like a little maid."
Anzik picked up the staff and stood, not bothering to brush the grime from his pants or hands. "What kind of place do you know?" Anzik picked up their conversation where he had interrupted Jodul. Jodul's thoughts spun circles.
Maybe I can wait for another fit to come on him and run for it. Maybe if I just run now, he won't do nothing to me. Maybe I can reason with him despite those voices. He hears.
Hey there, Anzik, Jodul ventured. I think I know someone who could help you with those voices you hear. A smart fella who won't give you to your paw.
Phelan's daytime tour of Zorin's brothels had been enlightening, but not in any way that would help with the search for the lost fair boy or the staff of Galen. The night ladies were as frightened of the lad as anyone in the city, and none admitted to having seen him. Even when asked by one who appeared in the guise of a McGrin officer, as Phelan had. He had learned, however, that he was unlikely to spend any coin at the establishments he had visited. He remembered the women he had seen, and shuddered. It was near to dusk when he arrived back at Merod's Goods, having taken a small meal at a street vendor. The streets had been growing quieter the past several days, Phelan had noted. The monstrous child on the loose had scared the common folk enough that many had locked themselves indoors at night
and kept clustered in groups in the daylight.
No one had yet been killed openly in public, but that did not comfort those who needed to travel to and fro along lightly traveled streets. Phelan paused before entering their shopfront hideout. As his eyes adjusted to the ether, he scanned the inside of the building to see who was within. He carefully navigated one of the alleyways aside the building to look into the back room, as his vision was not strong enough to view the whole of the interior from out front.
Just Aelon and Todd, by the look of it. I hope nothing has befallen Jodul.
Welcome back, Aelon greeted him at the door as he entered. Go and talk to Todd. He has news for you, and has been plucking his head bald waiting for you to return. Aelon misliked the way that sounded. Aelon was nervous, but he preferred to hear whatever news from Todd directly. Aelon followed him into the back room. He entered the back room cautiously and was ambushed by Todd.
We found him. He was in the sewers. Joe and I went down, see, and we heard him. Then I says, we should go tell Phelan. And Joe says, no, I got an idea. And I says, best of luck, I'm forgetting to Phelan. And so's I did.
Phelan pulled up short as Todd had rushed up to him and stood within breath-smelling distance of him. There was no scent of drink upon him, but Todd did smell vaguely of sewage, though a quick inspection did not show him to have been dunked in the stuff. Where is he? Phelan asked simply.
Over by the center of town, where the arse brown don't flow much. He'd probably had the sense to stay there the nicer parts, so he didn't give hisself away with the stink.
Where is Jodul? Phelan emphasized. Information about the boy was well and good, but he only had so many accomplices with whom to catch him.
Last I saw, he was planning to talk to the kid.
Todd shrugged, his gaze wandering to the floor.
Probably dead. I warned him we weren't the ones to stop him. You was. He thought he knew better. I did.
They all turned as Jodul entered from the front.
Boy's gonna be heading here soon as it's dark, Jodul said. How we best be ready for him. How'd you manage that piece of magic?
Todd asked, incredulous, slapping Jodul on the shoulder in congratulations and chastisement for making him think Jodul had died a vain death by the dangerous child.
It needed someone to trust. I think I was the first one he ran into what wasn't mad at him, or trying to catch him, Jodul said. He'd also got a noggin more twisted than a ship's rigging. Got him some voices in his head, bugging him like no one's business. I says I knew a fella who can help.
Jodul smiled at Phelan.
Strong in magic, voices in his head. Oh, Jodul, you have no idea how right you were.
Phelan smiled in return.
Let us prepare for him then.
The little shop had a back door. For a legitimate business, it might have been used for taking deliveries and the comings and goings of the staff. Phelan and his companions had barred it,
so that visitors could only enter through the front, leaving it as an escape route only. As Phelan and Jodul sat waiting, the bar was now leaning against the wall, and the door stood open just a crack. "Remember, leave us as soon as you have made your introduction. I want you and Todd covering the two exits. If you hear anything befall in here that makes you believe me dead, shoot him as he exits. There is some risk that he might have a shielding spell and kill you, but if I am dead, it may be your only chance at the staff. If he exits but nothing has gone wrong in here, leave him be. It may take time to win his trust," Phelan said, going over the plan aloud with Jodul for roughly the fifth time. Jodul nodded, then cocked his head as if realizing something.
"Hey, what if he don't make lots of noise killing you? How am I supposed to know if you're dead then?"
Phelan furrowed his brow. It was not a pleasant prospect, to say the least, but Jodul had the right of it. If the boy was killing merely with the draw of the staff, two unschooled ruffians like Todd and Jodul would likely not feel the disturbance in the ether as even a modest sorcerer would. Phelan stood and began rummaging through the crates left lying about the back room of the establishment. He found a crystal decanter and hefted it in his hands, liking the feel of it. He found some twine as well. Phelan set the decanter on the edge of the table and tied the twine through the looping handle it bore. The other end he looped around his wrist with a short length in between. "There. If I fall to the floor, the decanter will as well, hopefully shattering loudly enough to wake you and Todd from your slumbers outside," Phelan joked, preferring to jest over his potential death rather than consider it seriously.
"Yeah, that ought to do it," Jodul nodded.
The two proceeded to wait in nervous silence for the killer child to arrive, if indeed he actually intended to arrive at all. Jodul paced. Phelan sat still and quietly, trying to compose his thoughts.
"If only it is true, this could go much better than I had ever hoped. It will be delicate."
A noise outside had Phelan shifting his vision quickly into the ether. Outside was a small source, but a powerful one. It had to be Anzik Fair. Something the boy carried made a wake in the ether as it passed through, but was otherwise indistinct. Most objects of magic shone in the ether. The staff of Galen drew the stuff in upon command. It did not release its hold except by the will of its wielder. Phelan let his vision resume in the light as the boy tentatively entered the shop. He looked just as Jodul had described him, small, slight, and entirely unthreatening, unless you knew what the staff he bore was capable of.
"Hello, Anzik," Jodul greeted him with nervous cheeriness. "This is my friend. His name is Phelan."
Phelan had judged the risk too high to be lying to the boy. Much. If he was a clever one, he would catch them in any slip. Their lies needed to be subtle and few.
"Nice to meet you," Phelan ventured politely, smiling disarmingly. "You are old."
Anzik frowned, looking intently at Phelan. Phelan's eyebrows raised in mild surprise.
"Well now, I had not even thought about that casual little lie."
"None of us wishes to be old.
Would you want to give up being a boy to become an old man?"
Phelan asked. As he did, he let slip an illusion he maintained habitually, with hardly any thought anymore. His hair grayed at the temples and retreated slightly.
His skin lost some of its boyish luster,
and grew a few wrinkles about the eye and brow. Life extension had done well by him, but he hid its deficiencies behind a layer of illusions that were hidden from view even in the ether, though apparently not to such keenly observant young eyes.
"Who are you?"
Anzik asked. Having already been introduced, he could only assume the boy meant more than his name.
"A friend of Jodul's, and someone who can help you,"
Phelan replied, picking the most promising of truths to share. "Jodul can wait outside and guard us, to make sure we are not taken by surprise. I want us to be safe here."
"Yeah, I'll be just outside a ways, got it?"
Jodul said, taking up a short bow and quiver and heading for the back door, leaving the two sorcerers, young and old, Magrin and Cadrin, alone to discuss their problems.
"You do not want the staff?"
Anzik asked suspiciously once Jodul had left.
"You will not tell my father where I am?"
"I will not tell your father where you are, I assure you. As for the staff, think of it as gold," Phelan said. "Have a seat with me and I will explain." He gestured to the empty chair that Jodul had left vacant for all his pacing. The large table that had earlier shown the expanse of Zorin was now just barren. Anzik clutched the staff warily in both hands and accepted Phelan's offer of a place to sit. "Gold has value and men use it to trade," Phelan said. "Dishonest men kill for it, steal it, do whatever they can to get it. Honest men trade and barter. They sell goods they make. They exchange it for services they offer. It is the way of the world. Sometimes men who have no gold need to barter instead. A man with bread but no gold can fill his belly, but will go thirsty. A man with ale but no gold can quench his thirst, but go hungry. If the two meet, with no gold between them, they can still meet both their needs by trading some ale for some bread," Phelan lectured. It was a speech he had spent an hour working out in his head.
"I see," the clever boy replied. "You want to trade the staff for helping with the voices."
"Yes, but I am an honest man. I will not take it from you. I will not demand it from you. I will help you with the voices, and when we have taken care of them, I would hope that you would give me the staff in payment," Phelan told him. He looked right at the boy, but Anzik did not make eye contact, preferring to look down at his lap.
"Can you really make them stop?" Anzik asked after a pause.
"Yes. When I was a boy, I had the same problem. A kindly man helped me, and I intend to help you the same way."
"How?" Anzik asked meekly. "Father tried to make the voices go away, but he could not."
"First, I need to find where the voices are coming from. Then I will go there to stop them directly. I cannot stop you hearing them. I must stop them trying to speak to you," Phelan explained.
"They are in my head. I hear them there. Everyone knows they are in my head," Anzik whined, frustrated that Phelan seemed not to understand how the voices worked.
"No, they are not. If I stand across the room and shout to you, I am not in your chair. That is merely where you are when you hear. Just as you can see in the ether things that others are incapable of seeing, you hear what others are incapable of hearing. The voices are someplace, and I must find out where to go to stop them."
"I don't know then," Anzik complained, sniffling. "No one talks to me about the voices. Even Father hardly does anymore."
"Ask the voices then," Phelan told him. For the first time, Anzik looked up and met Phelan's gaze. "Ask them, and tell me what they say."
"How do I do that?"
Anzik asked, looking away again. "Ask the question in your head. Ask it out loud, so you hear it in there, just as you hear their voices. You have your own voice in your head. Make it heard," Phelan instructed him. He felt an echo of his own past. He did not remember the words, but he had received similar instructions once, many summers ago. Anzik shut his eyes tightly, concentrating.
"Where are you? Where are you?"
the boy repeated under his breath. "You need to get a name for the place. Use their words, not your own," Phelan advised softly. Anzik did not make any acknowledgement, but changed his mantra.
"What do you call your place? What do you call your place?"
Phelan noted with extreme interest that he had switched to speaking Akkadian.
"Are they saying anything back?"
Phelan asked eagerly.
"No, I will not be quiet. Tell me what to call this place,"
Anzik shouted in Akkadian.
"Easy, easy. Shout in your head, not with your mouth," Phelan cautioned.
Anzik was breathing hard, exerting himself mentally. His eyes snapped open and he looked up at Phelan distantly.
"Pious Grove Sanctuary," Anzik said,
stumbling a bit over the Tikalish words he was mimicking, clearly without understanding them. He looked as if he had been awakened from a nightmare. Balin took the shaking boy in his arms and hugged him tight.
It will be all right. I know where to go now to make the voices go away.
Anzik!
A voice outside shouted.
Anzik, please come home!
The boy curled tighter against Phelan, seeking his protection.
Anzik, I forgive you. I just want you safe. Anzik!
I can help hide you from your father as well. Phelan worked a bit of simple illusion to dim the boy's source from ether vision. If you do not use the staff, this spell will keep you from his notice for a few days. I take no payment until I have kept my end of the deal. Do you understand? Anzik nodded. Staying here may be dangerous. I will tell you when it is safe to return. Go. Hide. Try not to hurt anyone until I have the chance to help you quiet those voices, Phelan told him. Loosed from Phelan's embrace, the boy did not speak another word, but left by the back door, staff in tow. The voice, presumably belonging to a desperate father, continued but grew distant. Phelan looked to the decanter, perched unsteadily on the edge of the table, where it had slid when he thoughtlessly took Anzik in his arms. He untied the decanter and looked for something to pour the contents into. He needed a drink.